Congress is still investigating charges that the Bush administration was involved in politicizing the U.S. Justice Department. In fact, Karl Rove is supposed to testify today before the House Judiciary Committee on this matter. He was subpoenaed to do so, but he is not expected to comply with that subpoena. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk with someone this hour who was in the center of that storm. David Iglesias is a former U.S. attorney. He was the U.S. attorney for New Mexico from October 2001 to February of 2007 when he was asked to resign, forced to step down, presumably because he did not pursue prosecutions of Democrats allegedly involved in voter fraud issues in his state. Well, David Iglesias gives his account of what happened in his new book, Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration. And we welcome your questions for him. We will also talk with him about why this happened, why it matters, and whether it could happen again. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. David Iglesias, U.S. Attorney for the District of New Mexico from October 2001 to February of 2007. He was also chair of a committee of U.S. attorneys that advised former U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft on border and immigration issues. And he is with us to talk about his book, Injustice. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks very much for being with us. So this was a dream come true for you to be appointed a U.S. attorney back in October of 2001?
Oh, absolutely. It's something that I always had thought about but never thought I would have any realistic shot at. But that all changed in 01 when I got my appointment and was confirmed by the Senate.
Yeah, and then it turned into a nightmare.
Yeah, not right away, but after a little over 5 years, some disturbing things happened.
Yeah, talk about the key points here as to what led to you being asked to step down. There were some reports of voter fraud in the state of New Mexico that you were investigating.
Right, back in the 04 time frame, there was tremendous local media attention that there was allegedly all this voter fraud. So what I did is set up an election fraud task force, only one of two U.S. attorneys in the country that did so, the other one being there in Milwaukee, Steve Buscipic. I looked for it. I wanted to prosecute legitimate cases of voter fraud, but after about a year and a half, I had only one very weak case that I decided, after consulting with the Justice Department and the local FBI office, this was too weak to prosecute. So I didn't prosecute anything. And then I later heard the local Republicans were really angry with me for not filing anything.
And you didn't prosecute because you didn't think you had enough evidence to convict.
Well, right, because every ethical prosecutor will only file a prosecution if he or she believes there's proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which I knew I didn't have, so I didn't file anything.
Yeah, in fact, your senator gave you a call about this.
Well, it's not initially.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a simmering discontent about not filing bogus voter fraud cases. And then in 06, during the midterm cycle, I got a call initially from Congresswoman Heather Wilson. She was asking about sealed indictments involving a local, very prominent Democrat. And I couldn't talk to her about anything about a sealed indictment. It's essentially a classified document. So about 2 weeks later, this is still in October of 06, I get a call from my sponsoring senator, Pete Domenici, who wants to know when I'm going to file these indictments, if it's going to be prior to November. And to put it into context, Joy, the congresswoman was a protege of the senator, and she had been hammering away at her opponent for not filing any corruption cases during her opponent's 8 years in office. So I knew whatever I said could be used for political advantage, and I knew, based on what John Ashcroft told me, I had to stay out of politics. So I gave a very vague answer to the senator, and then he said he was very sorry to hear that, and then he hung up on me, and then my name was placed on a list to be fired about 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Talk about how it finally came down to you being fired. Wasn't it around Christmas time or close to it?
Yeah, it was actually on Pearl Harbor Day. I'm a Navy reservist, and I was coming back from the East Coast, going home, and I got a call from a friend of mine who ran the Executive Office of the U.S. Attorneys, and he said it was time for the administration to go a different way, and they wanted my resignation by the end of the next month. So I said, "What's going on?" He goes, "I don't know. I don't want to know. All I know is this came from on high," which told me probably the West Wing of the White House. And that came out of the blue. There had been absolutely no warning that there was any issue or any problems with me or my office.
Yeah, I mean, you had no idea that there... I mean, you didn't feel the pressure... Well, you did feel pressure to prosecute these voter fraud cases, but you had no idea this would lead to you being fired.
Well, no, because I knew the history of U.S. attorneys in that we were independent, we were protected from partisan politics, and I base this on talking to prior U.S. attorneys, both Democrats and Republicans in my home state, going back to the Nixon administration. And they said, look, this will be a wonderful job, best job you'll ever have. You'll have a lot of independence. So that's what I was working with. And then I saw how the administration protected Johnny Sutton, the U.S. attorney down in Austin, from all the heat he took for those border guard prosecutions. And I just naively thought they would protect us from local Republican Party pressure.
Yeah, you know, back when this happened, Mr. Iglesias, we did some programs on this, and we would hear from callers and other Republican experts who would say, "Hey, U.S. attorneys are politically appointed, and they serve at the pleasure of the administration. Bill Clinton, cleaned house of U.S. attorneys. Politics are always a part of the U.S. attorney's offices."
I beg to differ on that. I mean, what President Clinton did was he fired the previous administration's U.S. attorneys. There's nothing wrong with that. But no president in history has fired his own U.S. attorneys midterm for, politically suspect reasons. And to kind of put this in historical context, they asked for seven of us to step down on the same day, on December 7th of 07. If you look at the Congressional Research Service's figures, in a 25-year period, before 2006, only nine U.S. attorneys had been asked to step down, and all of them had been for misconduct. So none of us were charged with misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
So in one day, this administration pushed out almost the entire number that had been pushed out over a 25-year period. And, the administration initially said any reason or that the serving at will, the pleasure of the president, essentially meant at will, that they could do it for any reason. However, in the spring of 07, you started hearing him say, well, there are a few reasons that you can't legitimately fire a U.S. attorney, such as interfering with an ongoing federal investigation, which I believe is exactly what happened in my case and in several others.
Yeah. So who do you think was, behind the orders to fire you guys or gals, and who was behind this push to make prosecutions over these political, for political reasons?
In my view, based on the evidence that I have, the right wing of the Republican Party in my state and in Washington State and in Missouri and possibly California contacted Karl Rove and said, look, we need U.S. attorneys that are willing to play ball. Because what was going on is John McKay, the former U.S. attorney in Seattle, had refused to intervene in a gubernatorial recount in which there were allegations of voter fraud. John looked at the evidence and, like me, said, you need proof beyond a reasonable doubt. I don't have that, so I'm not going to file anything. So the locals are very upset with him. Todd Graves in Kansas City refused to file any voter fraud indictments for the same reason, that I did. Didn't have the evidence. Carol Lamb had just taken out a very conservative member of Congress, Randy Buchanan, and was investigating a high-level Bush appointee named Dusty Fago, who worked at the CIA. And then Paul Charlton was investigating Republican member of Congress, Rick Renzi. When you add all those threads together, it's a very disturbing picture. It's a very strong circumstantial case of trying to interfere with ongoing federal investigations for political advantage.
Yeah. Karl Rove was subpoenaed to testify today before the House Judiciary Committee in, it's a related case. It's the Alabama governor.
Right.
Yeah, and he...
Don Siegelman.
Yeah. It doesn't look like he's going to.
There's no way he's going to testify, Joy.
Mm-hmm.
No way. I mean, his lawyer is going to say you can just get yourself in trouble. You know, we'll claim executive privilege, and let the court sort it out later.
Yeah. Well, why do you think it's so important that Roe be compelled to testify?
The evidence, at least in my case, would indicate that he was part of the process in my termination. That my home senator complained to him about me not moving cases fast enough, and by that I think he means the corruption cases involving a guy that was indicted right after I left office. Roe was the so-called architect. He politicized everything. He never understood, in my view, that U.S. attorneys have to remain independent. And I think he carried the water and actually gave the order to Alberto Gonzalez that, we need to replace these U.S. attorneys that are being targeted by the local Republicans.
Well, this scandal, a lot of people say this scandal is what led to not only Karl Rove leaving the White House, but Alberto Gonzalez, too. You think that's the case?
Yeah, in fact, there's a book that just came out. A guy wrote that the U.S. attorney scandal was the final straw that broke the camel's back in Rove's case and was the reason he was asked to step down last August.
Mm-hmm.
And in Gonzalez's case, his atrocious testimony in front of the House and Senate in the spring of 2007 is what led to the credibility gap, which led to members of Congress calling on him stepping down. So I think there's a pretty clear connection in Gonzalez's case and a strong, but probably not as strong, evidence in the Roe matter.
We're going to take calls for David Iglesias, former U.S. attorney, author of Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number, if you have a question for him, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with David Iglesias during this hour. He is a former U.S. attorney. His book, Injustice, talks about the scandal, the Justice Department scandal that rocked the Bush administration. And we again welcome your thoughts and questions about this. Before we go to the phones, though, David Iglesias, why do you think our listeners should even care that Karl Rove might have been involved in, these political prosecutions? And why should it matter that the Bush administration put political pressure on you?
Because citizens have the absolute right to believe that when somebody is charged with a crime, it's for two reasons only, the evidence and the law. There's no other reason such as politics. And the Justice Department has historically been apart from partisan politics. And what happened to my colleagues and I was wrong, it was illegal, and it was stepping down a long and dark corridor, which this country can't go down.
Yeah, and it's not over, though, is it? This story isn't finished, is it?
Not at all. In fact, there's a huge report that the Inspector General's office has released a little bit of, but it's investigating not only our firings, but other instances of apparent politicization at the Justice Department. There are other congressional committees that are investigating this matter in a civil lawsuit, an historic first time ever civil lawsuit that's been filed from the House against two members of the administration.
Who's that?
Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton have been named in this lawsuit. From the House of Representatives, trying to get them to testify about their role in this matter, in this firing.
Yeah. Are you assured in any way that given the attention, even though the story isn't over yet, given the attention this was given, that this will never happen again?
Well, I don't think this is just a Republican problem. I mean, I think this is a problem any time one party is in power unchecked for 6 years, like mine was. There has to be checks and balances, which is what the framers of the Constitution intended. Something like this could happen if the Democrats have the House, the Senate, and the White House for the next 8 years. Because when you have that kind of unfettered, unchecked power, it leads to abuse, and abuse leads to laws being broken, unfortunately.
Yeah. To the phones we go, and we do have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Do you think it is a big deal or not that the Bush administration was allegedly pressuring U.S. attorneys to base prosecutions on political reasons? John in Germantown joins us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. First, I'd say I'm not sure you want to miss
your. I'm sorry, John. Your cell phone is so bad I can't even understand you. You want to try again?
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, first off, Johnny Sutton is your exemplar of a U.S. attorney. I'm not sure you want to use him, given his decision with the Texas Youth Commission. But my main question had to do with our local prosecutor in the southeast Wisconsin, Stephen Biskupic. He investigated voters committing frauds as opposed to election officials. I don't know if you know our story here, but I was just curious if you're familiar with it and if you compare and contrast your two situations between our U.S. attorney, who apparently was on the list and suddenly got off the list of firing when he started prosecuting people like Kimberly Prude, but failed to prosecute election officials who were stuffing the ballot box.
Well, yeah, that's Stephen Biskupic, we hear, was on the list
right.
of attorneys that were, I don't know, the watch list or the firing list. But he did not get fired. He did successfully prosecute some voter fraud cases, but the one that's gotten the most attention is the prosecution of a state employee.
Oh, who, is that Georgia Thompson?
Right, right. And it wasn't a voter fraud necessarily, but it was a case where presumably she was being charged with offering a travel agency a state contract. And the thought is that travel agency got the state contract because it was a contributor to Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. Turns out that a court of appeals overturned her conviction and said there was no evidence to convict her of any wrongdoing and essentially let her go, Georgia Thompson, when the appeals court reviewed this case. But do you know much about the Georgia Thompson case, David Iglesias?
Just pretty much what you said.
Mm-hmm.
What I can tell you is it's incredibly rare for somebody who's been convicted in federal court to be released by the appellate court. I mean, in my 5.5 years as U.S. attorney, that never happened. It happened there in Georgia Thompson case. It happened with Governor Don Siegelman in Alabama. That tells me that the government's case was unbelievably weak. And I'm wondering whether, I don't know if Steve's going to refile that case or not. I seriously doubt it, given all the negative publicity he got. But Stephen Biskupic and I taught a voter integrity symposium. We were at the days together in Washington, D.C. back in 05, I want to say then, and we were invited again in 06. I couldn't make it in 06, but yeah, I mean, we were hailed as examples of what you should do. You should look at allegations of voter fraud. You should work with your state and local and federal law enforcement and see if you can find anything. In my case, I didn't. I remember Steve making comments to the effect that that party officials were unhappy with him for only filing. He filed seven. He only filed seven, which was seven more than I filed. I just think you have to be incredibly careful as a prosecutor, not only when you file voter fraud prosecutions, but when you do it. I mean, look what happened to Brad Schlossman down in Missouri. Brad took Todd Graves' place, one of the fired U.S. attorneys, and Todd testified under oath that he was directed to file it right before the election by the Justice Department, and he later reversed himself. I've been asked to comment on that, and what I told the media was I didn't believe his testimony, because I knew the office he was working with, I knew the gentleman he was working with, and a specific direction is you don't file a voter fraud prosecution right before an election if you have any reason to believe it's going to affect the outcome of an election.
Is there any doubt in your mind, David Iglesias, that Stephen Biskupic, the U.S. attorney in Milwaukee, was taken off the list and not asked to resign because he at least prosecuted some voter fraud and presumably went after an ally of the Democratic governor of Wisconsin?
I know for a fact he was on the list. I know he was taken off the list. I know that happened after he filed the voter fraud prosecution. I mean, it's you know, I don't know the actual reason, but it's a reasonable inference to say exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate because that leads the public to start doubting the credibility of the prosecutor. And, you know, the system is built on people trusting that when somebody is charged with a crime, it's for all the right reasons and none of the wrong reasons.
Yeah. We have an email from Joseph in Preston, Minnesota, who would like you to comment on the whole voter fraud situation. Was there really fraud in the first place, or was this just an effort by Republicans to keep minorities from voting?
Mm-hmm. You know, based on my experience in New Mexico, there are instances out there on a sporadic basis of voter fraud. But in terms of widespread, systemic, election-altering voter fraud, no, I didn't see it. And, you know, unfortunately, I think, and this gets back to Roe, I think Roe saw this as an opportunity to, by having U.S. attorneys willing to file high-vis prosecutions right before an election cycle, that could suppress minority, you know, voting. And, you know, that's not what the Justice Department is supposed to do. You know, we're supposed to be the good guys, not the ones that are engaging in partisan politics.
Yeah. So did you feel any satisfaction in the resignation of Karl Rove?
Satisfaction. I'm not sure that's the right word. I mean, I think that was the right result. I think he's bad news. I don't think he understands what the rule of law means. I have a whole chapter in my book that is entitled All Roads Lead to Rove, and for a reason. He attempted to politicize things that had never been politicized, including our justice system, and we simply can't have that.
Yeah. Do you think the Justice Department has recovered from this?
They're beginning the process. I have friends and acquaintances that are still working in Washington, D.C. at the Justice Department, and they're telling me that things are better, but that things won't be completely healed until there's a new administration and completely new leadership.
Yeah, you must have been furious, though, when the reports of the firings made the media, that the firings were for performance-related reason, that you weren't up to snuff. That must have made you furious.
Absolutely. It's probably the angriest that I've ever been in my life, and I'm a pretty calm and measured person, because I knew that the officials that were saying that knew better. They had seen our office evaluations. Mine had just been done within the prior 1 year. And I knew my evaluations were top-notch, as were the rest of ours, with the exception of one guy. All of us had excellent office evaluations. These are done, I mean, these are a big deal. I mean, every 3 years, you have these teams of about 25 career people that drop in on your office and tear it apart and interview judges and agency heads. And I knew I was doing a good job. I knew my office was doing a good job. So when the attorney general and deputy were making comments that we weren't up to it, I mean, that's where I drew the line. I mean, I knew they could fire me, but I also knew that they couldn't slander me without consequence.
Yeah. Do you want to be a U.S. attorney again? Did you ask for your job back after this?
Oh, no. No, I would not have taken it back. I want my name cleared. When the Inspector General's report is made public, and if it contains what I think it's going to contain, I'm going to write the present AG a letter and ask for a written retraction.
Okay. And then what? What do you want to do when you grow up?
For the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to figure that out right now. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been out of law school now for 24 years. I enjoyed all but the last 3 months of being a U.S. attorney. It really was a great job. Well, I have 4 kids, 3 of which are in high school, and I'm in the private sector now. And frankly, I need to focus on getting some bills paid and getting ready for college. I mean, that's my focus right now.
The reason I ask is there have been some hints that maybe you should run for office.
Oh, gosh. You know what? I ran for office back in 98. And it was a great experience. But mm-hmm. No, I have no plans on running.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Rich in Appleton is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, and it's an honor to talk to you, sir. My question would be, is I'm just wondering if this issue reaches, if you feel this issue reaches any higher than Karl Rove. Do you feel that this actually goes into the Cheney office or the George Bush office?
That's an excellent question. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that it goes to Cheney. He was involved in lots of other things, but I'm not aware of any evidence indicating that he was involved in this. The president knew about my alleged issues because there have been media accounts indicating that Domenici, my sponsoring senator, complained to the president. I don't have any evidence regarding what he did with that. I mean, in the bigger scheme of things, is the president responsible for what happened? Sure. I am reserving judgment because I've just not seen the evidence showing how involved he was. Given his modus operandi for how he runs his administration, he delegates a lot of things because he has to. But I think this president over-delegates. And I can't imagine he would actually be involved in sacking seven U.S. attorneys in one day. I think he delegated that to Karl Rove, and Rove did it with pleasure.
Right. And I'm sorry that you lost your job.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have a good day.
All right. Thanks very much, Rich, for the call. You know, it should be noted, you're a lot of people, I didn't really say with your bag, you were appointed by a Republican president, so maybe it's clear. But, I mean, you are a former Navy JAG officer. You, I guess, a Republican in politics, and this must be sort of disillusioning to you to have this Republican president overseeing this administration that did this.
Tremendously disillusioning.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd run for office as a Republican. I ran for state attorney general back in 1998. Knew all the players. Believed in most of the platform, not all of it, but most of it. And I really thought that that these people that I knew and trusted and had worked with would do the right thing instead of doing the politically expedient thing. And when I saw what they did, that they were willing to try to politicize the Justice Department, trying to get me to rush indictments against Democrats, I just said, that's the wrong thing. We don't do that. That explains why, to use your word, I was so furious.
Mm-hmm.
I was furious for a really long time. I'm glad I spoke out. I'm glad I had colleagues that were in similar situations that were willing to speak out, too, because it would have been immeasurably more difficult had it just been me against the machine.
Mm-hmm. Doug in Oshkosh is with us now. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Gene. How are you?
I'm Joy, but go ahead.
I'm sorry, Joy. I apologize. I'm not a conspiracy theorist type thing, but anyway, former wife of state senator, I was audited by the IRS for 5 years in a row and never found any problems. Finally, at the Kiwanis Club, which I was president of, we had this IRS agent that was in criminal investigation, and anyway, the auditing stopped. They never found anything wrong. It just cost me a lot of money. So it's kind of funny how politics, even in fact, is in the IRS. So I guess my comment is that I can truly understand, what you're just saying. I've been there, done there, did it, and 5 years to audit. No problem.
Well, I'm sorry, Doug, you're saying that you were audited for political reasons. Is that your point?
Oh,
that,
there's no question about it.
Yeah, well, do you think that's the same as what happened with our guest?
It sounds very similar to me.
Well, I guess he's saying that politics is involved in everything in government. Surprise, surprise, maybe David Iglesias?
Politics should not infect our Defense Department, our Justice System, or even our State Department. I mean, there are a few departments within the federal government that politics should never touch. I would add the IRS to that, too. I mean, either you owe the money or you don't. And it shouldn't matter what your beliefs are or what member of the party you are. And if what the gentleman said is true, then it's just another example of why you cannot politicize things that are meant to be apolitical.
Yeah. We're talking with David Iglesias. He is a former U.S. attorney. He was one of the seven U.S. attorneys asked to resign or fired the same day. He was at the heart, in the middle of the Justice Department scandal, the one that accuses the Bush administration of putting political pressure on U.S. attorneys to make prosecutions based on political reasons. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your thoughts and questions for him about what he went through and what this means to the U.S. Justice Department, and what it means for our government, for that matter. It's not over yet. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with former U.S. Attorney David Iglesias about his book, In Justice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration. I'm wondering, David Iglesias, what you think about the flap going on right now. There's disagreement over whether Karl Rove should be held in contempt of court, maybe even thrown in the slammer for refusing to comply with this subpoena to testify before the House Judiciary Committee today. What do you think?
A subpoena is something that needs to be honored and respected, whether it's issued by Congress or by a court. And what Bush has done, similar to what Harriet Myers did and Josh Bolton, the current White House Chief of Staff, did, it's really a thumbing of the nose at the rule of law. You know, what they're saying about not showing up is we don't even have to show up to claim privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how it works. I mean, if any of your listeners are criminal law practitioners or civil law practitioners, they'll tell you that if their client gets a subpoena, you have to show up and argue why it doesn't apply or why there are exceptions, or you file a motion. You don't just ignore it. I mean, just ignoring it is not an option.
Right. So
by Rove not showing up, he's showing his contempt for the inherent powers of Congress. And you have to remember, the founders of the Constitution wanted co-equal branches of government, and this is showing a disrespect for that.
Yeah, he should be showing up to claim executive privilege. He's not going to. But what about executive privilege? Does he have an argument there? Do you think that he?
No. In fact, I wrote a piece for Slate.com last month that got posted, and what it says in a nutshell is this. There is such a thing as executive privilege. The Supreme Court recognized it in the U.S. versus Nixon case back in 1974, but no court has ever held that it applies to the situation that the administration is applying here. Executive privilege applies when there's advice given by advisors to the president, and you kind of see why you wouldn't want Congress forcing the advisors to tell them what was going on. But in this case, the president has already stated he had nothing to do with the firing. So this privilege has to cover communications amongst advisors, for instance, amongst Rove and Gonzalez or other people at the Justice Department. No court has ever held that it applies. That is what I say in my piece is it's stretching it like cheap spandex to cover something that just has never been held.
Yeah, plus I heard that Karl Rove was arguing that this wasn't discussed in the White House, or I didn't, you know, discuss this with anybody in the White House, but executive privilege is supposed to cover those discussions that he has with people in the White House, right? He's claiming executive privilege that he can't reveal any discussions he's had when he says he hasn't had any discussions.
Which is nonsensical. I mean, mm-hmm. What he needs to do is show up and say, either I had no discussions or mm-hmm. I did have these discussions, but they're covered by privilege. But he doesn't legally have the option of just saying, I'm not going to show up. And frankly, I hope he is held in contempt. To get back to your earlier question, should he be thrown in jail? No. You know, let the system work its way out. Let the Congress add him to the civil lawsuit that they've already filed against Bolton and Harriet Myers.
Back to the phones. Mike in Kenosha is with us. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, it's nice being with you again. I've talked to you before. Like you say, this administration, George Bush, Cheney, and Karl Rove, they've been politicizing not just the Justice Department, but the Department of Labor. I mean, they're hiring people, you know, that are basically lifetime federal employees that have a political bend to the right. And that's not what it's about. It's supposed to be the Labor Department Justice, it's supposed to be neutral. They're supposed, like this guy is saying, they're supposed to be. And what can we do about that? I mean, I guess, has he got any suggestions?
Yeah, and I want to know that too. But first, is the Labor Department the same as the Justice Department, David Iglesias?
I got to be honest with you. I don't know a whole lot about the Labor Department. The one thing that makes this issue so appalling and why your listeners should care is U.S. attorneys are the only political appointees that can take away your life, your liberty, and your property and do it legally. I mean, we're vested with tremendous powers and responsibilities, and we need to make sure those are exercised in a responsible manner and not based on partisan political reasons.
Yeah. So, what can a listener do if he or she is upset with something like the politicization of the Justice Department? What does the average Georgian do about this?
Well, they need to go to the polls and vote for people that they feel represent their views. And you know, we're in a presidential cycle, and you know, we've got a chance to change things. So, I'm sure the caller knows exactly what he wants to do.
Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. And next we go to John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Yes, maybe this is more the political aspects of this than the legal aspects, but perhaps David Iglesias would like to comment anyway. I keep being puzzled by why all this emphasis was placed on voter fraud investigations. Earlier it was mentioned that this was a way of intimidating minorities from voting. I was wondering if also there would be a factor of just trying to be a distraction from other voting problem issues, such as with the loss of ballots and electronic voting machines of Florida, the congressional race in Florida number 13, for example, or going way back and even to the Bush's original election in 2000,
mm-hmm.
that this is just basically a red herring thrown out and saying is an alternative.
What do you think of that, David Iglesias?
Yeah, well, that's possible. The thing to keep in mind is most election issues are run by the state and local governments. There's not a whole lot of federal government input, with the exception of there's I think two or three federal statutes, criminal statutes, that allow a U.S. attorney to intervene and prosecute. But again, you need proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and you can't do it right before an election cycle like Brad Schlossman did down in Kansas City without facing some consequence. I'm a believer in limited government, the history of U.S. attorneys is that historically very few had ever filed voter fraud cases. I mean, in my office, for example, it had been 1992 since the last voter fraud case was filed. So it's not something that happens very often, but this administration really put an emphasis on it, again, I believe, for partisan political gain. And that's not what the justice system is all about. It's about committing a crime and being able to prove it, regardless of what your party affiliation is.
We have an email from Anne in Madison wondering if you can talk at all about the Valerie Plame case. Did the prosecution stop at Scooter Libby and not go to Dick Cheney because of this kind of political pressure?
You know, I don't really know enough about the Valerie Plame matter to intelligently answer that question. But I can tell you on a personal basis, I've had a chance to meet Valerie Plame Wilson and her husband Joe in Santa Fe. They came to one of my book signings and were up to the days with me, and I know they feel very passionately about what happened to them was wrong, and it was illicit, should not happen again. I mean, the fact that a career CIA agent would be outed like she was and lose her job and not getting any retirement because of what her husband wrote in the New York Times, mm-hmm. that's appalling. It's what we expect from broken down third world countries, not here in America. And I have a lot of sympathy for Valerie and Joe and hope that they do well, this movie that's coming out. And I just got her book, and I'll be reading it shortly.
We go now to Ann in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mr. Iglesias. I'm calling just to say that a week after Karl Rove had left the White House, he was on one of the talk shows, and they were discussing what he was going to be doing, and he wanted to get, you know, the Republicans back in good standing. He said that they had taken a terrible hit the last election, and it was because of the controversies. And the one thing he cited, the first thing that came to his mind, was the Cunningham controversy. And I thought it was very interesting that the one thing he cited was something linked to the attorney scandal.
Well, and not only that, that's a good observation, but Randy Duke Cunningham was sentenced to 8 years in federal prison, which represents the longest any former member of Congress have ever had to serve. And he was prosecuted by Carol Lamb, who was fired on the same day that I was. And when Carol got the news, she called the Justice Department and said, don't do this for a bunch of reasons, including the fact that it looks like retaliation. And then the guy she talked to gave one of the worst one-liners in this entire mess. He said it would be a one-day story.
Well, he was wrong.
I'll say. Yeah. I mean, this has been going on for a year and a half now. And as you stated several times, which I appreciate, because that's part of my stump speech, is it's still going on. This matter is not over.
Yeah. When will it be over?
Most of it should be over sometime in the next month when the Inspector General's report is completely released. The first part that was released last month showed the illegal politicization of the Honors Program. This is a program for really smart recent law grads who can come in. I think they serve for 1 or 2 years, and then they have a chance to be career Justice Department lawyers. What this administration was doing was using political litmus tests and excluding people who appeared to be liberal or members of organizations, you know, that they did not approve of. You can't legally do that. In fact, the two officials that were doing that have just been named in a class action lawsuit that was filed several days ago. So, I mean, this matter has really has had repercussions not just in the criminal world but in the civil world.
Next, we go to Mike in Langlade County. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling because as a your guest is a, I'm going to say, political operative in the state of New Mexico. Greg Palast, if you're familiar with him, is a BBC commentator and author, and in particular wrote a book called Armed Madhouse, wherein he makes continuing allegations about the 2000 and 2004 elections in the state of New Mexico, where there was, he, according to his reports, substantial Republican shenanigans designed to suppress the Democratic voting in the state of New Mexico in both of those presidential elections. Are you at all familiar with that and know anything about those allegations? And I'll
sure,
I'm off the air.
Sure, I'm happy to respond. Yeah, Greg interviewed me twice. He interviewed me in New York last year and then at my house last month. And regarding the 2000 allegations and 04, I set up a toll-free number that was open for about 2 months after holding a press conference in New Mexico saying, if you have any information or any allegations of voter fraud, please call this number and I'll investigate it. I didn't get one phone call related to what the gentleman just talked about. We had over 100 phone calls, but most of them were spurious, things like, you know, somebody stole my yard sign. Mm-hmm. Somebody trespassed and took my bumper sticker off, which is, you know, a petty crime, but it's not an election crime. And I do know that Greg has had New Mexico in his targets. One thing that I can tell you is there are two counties in the state of New Mexico that have had entered into a consent decree with the Justice Department going back, oh gosh, at least 8 years, probably even longer. I think it was filed under the Clinton administration. But that was for the issue of having ballots in non-English languages, because we have lots of people that speak Spanish and native languages. So I was aware of that issue. That was handled by the Justice Department in Washington and not by my office. But no, this allegations that Greg mentioned about tremendous Republican voter suppression, I never saw it, and I didn't receive information regarding that. Had I would have investigated it.
Yeah. I know that Greg Palast is also interested in the very issue that you're in the middle of in terms of the firings of the U.S. attorneys and the the politics and the Justice Department. I think I saw him interviewing you on YouTube about this.
Oh, yeah. I think that was based on the interview from last summer, but the new interview ought to be posted pretty soon on BBC.
Ken in Watertown. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I've got a two-part question here. I'm just curious on what the caller or what your guest thinks about just voting in general. I mean, just with all the stuff that's gone on with the last two elections, I mean, will this be a continual problem, like every election year, you know, voters having to worry about, you know, fraudulent voting or different sides of being liberal or conservatives messing with voters?
Yeah, and you had another point very quickly, Ken?
Yeah, the other point is I'm just curious if he thinks that, you know, will there be any justice in him to what's been done to him in this administration or the next, and I'll take my I'll take everything off the air.
All right.
Okay. I hope this election cycle, especially at the presidential level, is won by a large margin, because it's when you get those close, razor-thin wins or losses, that's what creates a lot of public distrust of the system. I mean, what this country can't go through again is another Florida recount. I mean, that was agonizing. So I hope whoever wins, and I've not publicly stated who I'm backing, but I hope they win by large margins, so there's no doubt that there wasn't cheating going on.
So the former Republican U.S. attorney is not going to say who he's supporting for president.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So the what about, is anybody going to be held accountable? I think he's actually looking at higher up in the administration.
Well, it all hinges on what the Inspector General report recommends. They could recommend a special counsel be appointed to investigate criminal violations. If that happens, this administration will not sign off on that, but the next one could. You've got about a 5-year statute of limitations for things like obstruction of justice, witness intimidation, perjury, that kind of thing. Will there eventually be justice? I'm a big believer that eventually things do right themselves up. I do think there'll be logical consequences that people like Gonzalez and others will be held fully accountable, yes.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time. I want to thank you very much for spending this hour with us.
Thank you very much.
David Iglesias was U.S. Attorney for the District of New Mexico from October 2001 through February 2007. His book, Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.